I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A really funny book out now is Etiquette for Idiots and Other Stupid Stories. Its author, Elizabeth Imasiro, joins me now to talk about it, its contents, and more. If you don't know how to act when you're invited over for dinner or you lack social grace on Facebook or in public, this is the book for you. Mrs. Zero dispenses advice, tips, and general manners in a no-nonsense, humorous, and inimitable way. I bought the book for stories on her famous father and for some laughs, but there's some practical advice. For example, if you spill something at someone's house or, God forbid, you break something, don't ask the host if they'd like you to pay for it. Leave a check or some cash, which they'll find later, because, of course, they'll say they don't want you to pay for it. Or if you leave a bathroom stall and none of your Lincoln logs have flushed down, making someone look at your lunch dung is like giving grandma the finger. Elizabeth Imasiro is a writer, producer, and comedian. She's a graduate of the Groundlings and Second City and has done a lot of radio work at KABC and KUCI in California, among two stations. Visit ElizabethZero.com for more. This book is published by Whiskey Creek Press. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Elizabeth Imasiro. Mrs. Zero, good morning.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on your podcast. That's really nice.
Thanks for joining us. There's a lot of humor in this book, a lot of laugh-out-loud stuff here. You, of course, have this background in comedy, as I've mentioned, the Groundlings and Second City. But I suspect growing up you were naturally funny, were you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my parents always encouraged me to be funny, and they laughed a lot at what we did, and that was sort of our family's way of communicating with each other, is by teasing each other. And so that's something that I had to learn as an adult, that other people, you know, if I liked them, I would tease them, and they would be, like, offended, like, why are you teasing me? And I'm like, no, it's because that's how we show love, so...
Yeah, I guess that's most people don't see that if you start making fun of someone, you really do like them. I guess it's like the thing at school where you pull the girl's hair that you like.
Yeah, I think it's probably very similar to that.
Yeah. I mean, we know who your dad is. What was your mom like?
My mom is a wonderful woman. She is actually quite beautiful. She has these incredible, like, piercing blue eyes that I've never seen really on anybody. Probably maybe the closest, something like Elizabeth Taylor's eyes. Very, very bright. And she's just an amazing woman. You know, she kept a clean, amazing house, and she taught us how to grow vegetables in our garden. We grew up in my formative years in Connecticut. And, you know, she's just a really classy, amazing, lovely woman, really. In fact, I was just talking to her the other night. But she's also really down to earth and very, and she laughs at my, you know, we have, you know, a very dark sense of humor in our family, and so, and she thinks that's funny, so she really gets it, and very sweet and encouraging.
Yeah, and did she really tell you years ago that abortions weren't easy to get at the time she was pregnant with you?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the mentality of the women from that era.
Yeah.
You know, they say really screwed up things, and it just, you know, to me, that's, at the time, you know, it was pretty traumatic when I did find out I was pregnant at the age of 21 with my son, who's now 25. And so, you know, but when you look back on it, to me, I think that's, it's kind of funny. It's like a really, people say screwed up things to their kids all the time. We do it to each other, and we don't even realize, like, what we're saying or doing or the impact of what it really means. And to me, it's just kind of funny to make fun of that and bring light to it.
So you talk in the book about what you're like as a mother, what you're like as a parent. If we asked your kids what you were like, what do you think they'd say?
Well, you know, I think they'd say my mom is awesome and I love her. You know, I spend a lot of time with my children, and even though they're both adults now and they live on their own, you know, they just came. I just had a little get together to celebrate the release and the publication of my book, and they came to the party, and I mean, they were just, they're just really supportive, amazing people, you know, but the story would have been different when they were teenagers. Like all teenagers, they think I'm a dork, and you know, they didn't like the fact that I was enforcing, you know, rules on them that they were not pleased with, but they got over it and grew up, and now they're just really lovely adults.
And I'm assuming that they're well-mannered and polite people who have a sense of etiquette.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're absolutely well-mannered, lovely, polite people. But, you know, they also are 25 and 23, and so my etiquette, you know, is not going to be necessarily their etiquette. But, you know, most 23 and 25-year-olds have their own life, and they're super busy. And I'd, of course, prefer that we were, still living together or at least seeing each other, you know, a lot more than we do, you know, more than once a week. But, you know, that's just kind of what happens. Nobody really prepares you to have adult children. So the etiquette sort of is you figure it out as you go along, I guess.
Well, why do you think it is that people are so ill-mannered? Because I'm in reading the book, I mean, you know, a lot of it is funny. But then a lot of it is you know, useful, serious stuff. And it surprised me, I guess, that people don't know certain things. Just even email etiquette and, you know, when you're forwarding something to someone, you know.
Well, I think, honestly, the unfunny answer to that question has a lot to do with two things. And the one major thing is technology. And technology is moving so fast right now that, really, man has not changed. Our needs and desires and wants and insecurities are the exact same as they were, you know, 100 years ago. Or, you know, when we were in the caveman days, we just wanted to stay alive and we wanted warmth and we wanted love and we wanted touch and food and that kind of stuff. And so, but with technology advancing so quickly, people don't necessarily know how to communicate. And when someone writes something versus says something, you know, they're more apt and have more courage to write it and to say it to your face. So things like that transfer over. And also the way that we culturally live, especially in this country, we move away from our grandparents. We don't live in the same house with our grandparents. And so lessons and things like that tend to get lost. And one out of two marriages end in divorce, so you don't have family staying together. And when you don't have two parents in agreement with the, you know, their child, parenting sort of gets moved around and rules sort of bend and change, and it's a really difficult situation. So a lot of that's, you know, just how to be a good husband or be a good wife or parent your children gets lost because, you know, we don't have our elderly relatives to be that example. And, you know, and there actually are a wealth of books out there. One of the books I recommended in my book is called Parenting with Love and Logic, and it is actually very helpful in teaching your children how to become responsible adults and do it in a loving way that, you know, makes them, or doesn't make them, but provides them the opportunity to learn from their consequences of their actions. So, you know, that's more on a serious note, of course.
Yeah.
My book is mostly ridiculous. I mean, like, there's also etiquette for, like, sociopaths and, like...
Yeah, for dead people.
Anything. Yeah, for dead people, stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, you write in the book that you read a lot of these self-help books in the past. I mean, you also reveal that you've had quite an eventful life. You have two very unique parents, and you know, you had a couple of kids at a young age, more than one marriage. And I suspect that, did you seek out these self-help books because of what had happened in your life, or did you just enjoy reading them, or what was it about seeking, say, answers to questions of life? And now,
in your book, writing your own. Yeah, my parents were really different, and so I felt, you know, when I was married at 21, and they handed me a baby just right after I turned 22, and that's sort of a shocking thing to happen at 22 years old, and I quickly grew up and thought, oh, I don't want to mess this up. I really want to, you know, have a great relationship with my children and spend a lot of time with them, and that's not really something, I mean, my parents and I love each other, but my family's not that close, and so... And I wanted that, you know, so I took my children camping and fishing and all the fun things, hiking, and, you know, we did all that wakeboarding and snow skiing and things that I would have liked to do growing up. But in addition to that, I didn't really have necessarily, like, rules or, you know, consistent parental advice, you know, help with my homework, things like that, that growing up, because my parents were just really, you know, consumed with their lives, and my dad, you know, especially with his alcohol problem and then his quick, very rapid rise to fame, I think he might have gotten a little swept away with that in the sense that he wasn't able to be the best parent he is now to his son. And And so, you know, then my mother, of course, she had her first, my sister, when she was 18. So parenting roles, you know, there really wasn't a lot of information like there is today. There's just a wealth of information and books and help that you can get. And so I just took advantage of that. I wanted to have that experience that I didn't necessarily have growing up. And, you know, and it turned out, everything that I read, you know, whenever I've come up against a problem in my life, I just kind of figured out that you can't change other people, but you can change yourself. And so if you read a self-help book, it's helping yourself to kind of adjust the situation or figure out a new way to approach something. You know, going to counseling should always, I think, be, you know, one of the first choices, or reading a book versus, you know, the last resort, which is unfortunately what a lot of people do, and they have, you know, they suffer worse problems as a result.
Is that what you know now that you wish you knew then?
No, because I knew it then, and I did that. I did that. I've been reading self-help books and health books and health and nutrition, you know, ever since I was 20, you know, and even probably before that. And now I'm 47, but people say I look a lot younger, and I do actually look a lot younger. I'm super healthy, and it's because I took care of myself, and I did all the things that those books, you know, not all the things, but the things that appeal to me. You know, you just kind of pick and choose what you like from various books that you read.
When you're with your kids, do you have that situation where they say they think you're their sister or something like that?
Oh, yeah. People think when I'm wearing my sunglasses, and when I was in New York with my son not too long ago, my son is 6'3". He's really tall, and he looks older as well with his sunglasses, and I look younger, and people are like, oh, are you guys out on a date? And I'm like, no. He gets so bummed out. He's like, and he hates it, like, if I look, like, all decked out, if I'm dressed to the tee, you know, because they get a lot of stares when I go out. You know, he's just like, Mom, you know, like, don't put so much makeup on, or don't, you know, whatever. So,
yeah. When people want to ask about your dad, and they inevitably do ask about your dad, you've got a clever answer. What is it?
Oh, well, I usually ask him, well, how's your dad doing? Because it's just kind of weird.
I mean,
even though, like, people, and my manager had this talk with me the other day, because people are like, someone was referring to me as a celebrity, and I'm like, I'm not a celebrity, and my dad's a celebrity, but I've never considered myself a celebrity, and my manager was, like, trying to talk me into that I am a celebrity. He's like, no, you are, because of all these things you do, like, people think of you that way, and I'm like, oh, I just can't get my head around that. That's just so weird. But it, you know, for a long time, I didn't put myself in the public eye, and I wasn't on stage or on camera or on radio. I was behind the scenes just writing and producing, so in that case, I was much more unknown. And I also went by my married name, which was Clark at the time, so no one had any clue who my father was. But on the occasion that some people knew or would bring it up, it just seemed so weird that, you know, people want to say, like, well, what's your dad like? You know, and just ask personal questions, because to me, he's just my dad. And I intellectually understand he's a celebrity and people are curious about that. But, you know, I kind of just put that question back on them, because it's like, you know, it is awkward to answer personal questions about your family to someone you just met. It's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a question you would normally ask a person you just met, other than the fact that their family is famous or something like that.
But I suspect, because I've been a big fan of his for years, and because I like him, he seems, and one of the reasons I like him, I think, is because he seems like he is on the air as he is off the air, whether that's serious, silly, funny, intelligent, tough, and I suspect that he is that in real life. I mean, he is, I guess.
No, he's a cranky, old, curmudgeon, grouchy, real-life cowboy. He was raised, he rode a horse before he could walk when he was a baby. He is really that person, only, excuse me, my voice is hoarse. He really is that person in real life, and he, except in real life, he's much more introverted, so he'll talk a lot more about what's going on in his life while he's on the air, but if you're sitting with him one-on-one, you know, he's extremely quiet, actually, so.
Growing up, did you resent that on the air he was a different person, or probably outwardly expressive or even affectionate?
No, he was always, he's always, you know, been very affectionate. He'll give us hugs and tell us he loves us and check in to see what's going on with us. But of course, yeah, like any daughter, you know, she wants her dad to be more emotional, like women try to get men to be. And, of course, that's, you know, most men just typically aren't. That's just how most typical men are, is they're not really made that way. And so, of course, that's the goal of every woman and teenage daughter, I think, is to have that kind of relationship. And sometimes, you know, there are, I had dinner with Larry Kenney the other night, who was here on a business trip. I'm sure you're familiar with him.
Yeah,
he's an amazing comedian who was on my dad's show and friends with him for years and years. And he knew me as a little girl, and we grew up together. And he has grandchildren, and his daughter Carrie and his other children. And he's such a loving, warm dad. And he's giving me hugs and saying, "Oh, I love you, Elizabeth," and going out to dinner with me and hanging out. And, you know, that to me is like the consummate, you know, loving father. And not everybody has that. And certainly my dad's not necessarily like that, but that's fine. You know, that's who he is, and you have to respect people for who they are and accept that.
You're quite candid in the book about growing up with your father. You say some stuff that I suspect that he wouldn't want have said publicly, but you wrote it anyway. But you wrote it anyway. Did you find at this point in your life the need to do that?
Well, here's how it kind of went down. I really wanted to. I am all about sharing about who I am, and I love connecting with people. And I wanted to write a book, and I wanted to write my thoughts down, and that's just who I am and what I wanted to do. And I would want to do that regardless of who my father is. And so when I first showed my dad what I had written, he did not like it. He did not want to be written about because he's very private. But over the years, you know, I got to think about it, and I thought about it for over a year. You know, I've worked on it and worked on different versions of the book, and then it really actually took a couple years to kind of put it all together. But I thought about it probably for about 6 months, and I came to the conclusion that, you know, my dad is really honest about who he is, and he says, "Look, this is the person I am, and if you don't like it, too bad, get over it. I love you, but this is the deal." And I appreciate that, and I respect that. And so I came to the conclusion that, you know what, I'm who I am, too. And you might not like it, but this is who I am, and this is the deal, and you're going to need to get over it, too. And so, you know, just because, you know, he doesn't trump me because he's necessarily a celebrity, and I certainly didn't say anything that he has not already said or admitted to, or I don't feel that I was disrespectful in any way, but I am being true to who I am by writing about myself and my life, and he just happens to be my father. And I basically said, look, if we got everything we wanted, then I would have Mr. C from Happy Days as my dad. I didn't get that either, so I'm not Donnie Cunningham, and you're not Mr. C, so, you know. And so he came to the conclusion, he still wasn't happy when I published the book, but he said, "I love you, and I hope it does well, good luck." And so, you know, you just have to be, at the end of the day, who you really are, and you know, do the best you can.
What does Mr. Zero think of the book?
He likes it. He's read it so many different times that I think he's just kind of burned out on it right now.
Yeah.
So different versions as it was coming along, but he the whole story about his when he was wearing a toupee and how I got him out of that. I actually told my father that when I was shortly after I got married, I told him the whole story because he had seen some pictures of Larry before when he was wearing the toupee, and he's like, "Why did he shave his head?" Like, and I said, "Well, that was a toupee," and my dad was like, "Oh my God, are you kidding me?" And so I told him the whole story, and then my dad announced it on national radio and on Fox Business Network, which he's on. And so, of course, Larry got phone calls from all his relatives all around the country, and saying, "Oh, we heard you know, your father-in-law talking about you," and he was just like, "Oh, I mean, it's so shocking when you're a private person to have anyone talk about you and sort of tell that story." And I just sort of sheepishly looked at him and said, "You know, sorry, but welcome to my family. So don't tell my dad anything unless you, are cool with him talking about it, because he will."
Now, you guys seem to have a pretty good marriage. Is there a secret to what makes it work?
Yes. We spend no time together. We live in two separate places.
Really?
Yeah. Well, we both work a lot. Uh-huh. Mr. Zero was never married, never had children, so he's not quite into the whole marriage thing. And I have been married my entire adult life, and I have two grown children. So we've worked it out where we, you know, see each other when we feel like it, and then we're traveling and working when we feel like it. So it works for us.
Yeah. Now, Dave, you mentioned that, you know, you worked behind the scenes for a long time and now are coming out with this book, and you're also speaking out politically. What's the impetus behind that? Was that something that you felt that you needed to do at this time of your life, or?
Yes, well, you know, most of my life I've spent studying comedy and improv and stand-up and writing and producing and raising children and working part-time. I was a hairstylist for many years and just, you know, basically just balancing a lot of different plates. And it was after I married Mr. Zero that I didn't have to work as much and my children were grown and moved out. And I sort of took a look at my life and thought, well, how do I want to spend the rest of my career and my life? And how can I best use my talents as a writer and a producer and a comedian? And I became very interested in what's going on politically in our country, and I did so because I, not only am I so proud to be an American, but I'm so thrilled to be an American woman who has the freedom that I do to use my voice, to own property, drive a car, live alone, to do all the things that I can do. And I see women around the world being just honestly persecuted and mutilated and, you know, in this country as well, our freedoms are being taken away, not just with women, but with every citizen. And people are blindly just giving them away, and it really upsets me when I hear people think, oh, or they say, I don't care if the government wants to listen to my phone calls. I don't have anything to hide. But what they don't understand is that's a slap in the face for any person who's ever stood up for our freedom and died for our country. And sure, it's just, you know, oh, it's just this little thing here, but when you have a government who is enslaving us and taking our money and not even holding, you know, giving money out to organizations that are abusing this privilege and fraudulently, you know, taking money, and there's no accountability, it started to just really anger me. And I thought, well, how can I be a positive force for change? And so we have a lot of really smart political guys who are on the radio and in the media, and they're talking and they're making sense. But a lot of them are just kind of hitting people over the head and, you know, screaming at them. And the way to get people's attention is through humor and comedy. And the liberal media and, you know, the liberal elite in Hollywood have done a magnificent job of lampooning, you know, how ridiculous the conservative movement is. And it is really ridiculous, some of it is. But it's also equally ridiculous on the liberal side. And so I'm working with an organization called Free and Equal, and there's a link on my website, or you can go to freeandequal.org. And what they're doing is they're changing the electoral system by making it easier for third-party candidates to get on the ballot and to become part of the debate system, and educating the youth on, you know, how to run for office and encouraging them to learn about issues and what's going on and to stand up for our freedom in this country. And I'm just as liberal with the issues on social freedoms as I am conservative on fiscal, you know, money issues. And people don't know what's going on with the Federal Reserve. When I learned about what the Federal Reserve really is and what they're really doing, they're a private organization printing money, and really they're not even printing it anymore. They're just typing numbers into bank accounts at their whim, and they're controlling really the world economy. And people don't understand that kind of stuff because it's complicated. And so, like on my blog, I wrote a blog comparing the Federal Reserve to the porn industry and making it funny and sexy. And so I'm just trying to kind of use my talents to get people's attention to just take notice and go, wait a minute, what's really going on? Because the liberal media really is lying to us, and the government is lying to us, and we don't know all the answers, but we certainly, you know, we know they're lying to us because they're already coming out and admitting it to us. The whole IRS scandal that just recently went on, targeting conservatives. And so at some point we have to hold them accountable, and so the way that I can do that is I can use my talents and put myself out there. And I have a track record. I'm a responsible adult woman who's raised a family, been married, been divorced. I own property. I'm not a drug addict or a pill addict. And, you know, and I have the track record to stand up and say, hey, this is what's really going on. And one of the reasons I wanted to write the book and kind of put all my dirty laundry out there, too, is because I'm about being honest and connecting with people. And so that's it. That's who I really am. You know, if people try to discredit me, they can't, because I've already kind of discredited myself and made myself out to be a little bit of a nut job. But that's okay. We all are. The point is that, you know, let's be honest about it and have a dialogue and come to the table, both liberal and Democrat and libertarian and whoever, I mean, excuse me, liberal and conservative and libertarian, and have a conversation and find a compromise. And that's really what I'm about politically, so...
Elizabeth, it's been really fun having you on today. I really enjoyed this book. I hope it does well for you.
Oh, thanks so much. It was great being on, and I appreciate it. Sorry, I kind of went on and on a little bit.
Not at all. I think what one realizes, I mean, we're Canadian, and so we sort of look at the United States the way we want to, and that it is polarized. But, I mean, there's a lot of nuance on both sides. And I think that's what you've sort of demonstrated, that it's not red and blue. It's
purple.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. ElizabethZero.com is the website for more. The book is called Etiquette for Idiots and Other Stupid Stories. It's published by Whiskey Creek Press. Elizabeth Imus Zero, join me on the line from Los Angeles and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.